To order on 3:30. On the agenda, we have SB 40, making appropriation from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation Revolving Fund to the General Fund and providing for an effective date. We'll have HCR 1, creating the Long Range Financial Planning Commission, and we'll have SB 1, an act relating to state implementation of federal statutes. I think we will start, since we have legislative budget not a representative here, I would like to take up SB 40 at this time and primarily just give a little overview on what my purpose was on introducing the bill. As we all know, the state of Alaska, we've been talking about ever since I've been down here, is facing a major funding shortfall again this year in 1996 and beyond. Our primary tool in handling this budget shortfall has been and will continue to be spending reductions. I also feel it's time to use some of our savings accounts to cushion a blow on our state's economy. The state general fund has contributed $1,073,515,000 to capitalize Alaska Housing Finance Corporation over the years. A majority of these funds were appropriated in 1980 through 84. Imputing just a nominal interest rate on that would raise that amount of money current value-wise considerably. In writing the FY 95 operating capital budget, the governor legislature felt it was prudent to begin receiving a dividend from Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, HFC. The Division of Legislative Audit conducted an audit 04-4486-94 to prepare a financial analysis of HFC to determine the amount of cash and investment that would be available in fiscal year 94 and 95 and beyond. The audit analysis of AHFC's financial statement and cash flow projections dated 3/15/94 by Ledge Audit demonstrated that there was approximately $535 million of available unrestricted cash at that time that could possibly be withdrawn without having a detrimental effect on the bond rating of AHFC. The FY 95 budget included a dividend from AHFC of the first $200 million. The projection was FY 96, 7, a two, about the same, 200 and 120 some. Based on the audit analysis, I introduce SB 40 to assist the administration and particularly the legislature in solving and continuing to analyze the availability of funds in this area. Year's appropriation of $200 million is on track with $50 million deposited quarterly from HFC. As of my understanding, there's been no negative impact on HFC's bond rating as a result of this dividend program. In view of some recent activity with HFC on new programs that they've initiated since last fall, starting about last fall, I thought that at least restating the option of the drawdown from HFC or contribution for HFC back to the general fund to analyze that should be kept in the forefront, and I would ask that at this time Randy Welker would be willing to talk to us about what last year's audit indicated and any public knowledge, public information available on an update on that proposal in light of current new program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Randy Welker, the legislative auditor. The chairman accurately summarized our efforts last year during the legislative session. The Budget and Audit Committee responded to a request from the Senate leadership to have us go in and conduct a financial analysis of AHFC last February. Part of the concern that brought about us going in there has always been that when AHFC has been asked in the past whether there is any excess cash, any surplus in the corporation that the legislature could have access to, the legislature was frustrated oftentimes with the response that all their assets are tied up and that the bond covenants and the restrictions imposed by the bonds precluded any extraction of cash from the corporation. Last session, the committee, Budget and Audit Committee, authorized us to go in and take a look at the financial condition of the corporation. We went in primarily with the focus of identifying any and all surplus cash that may be available to the legislature. We did a very intensive, detailed review of their financial statements, their cash flow projections. We did conclude that we believe that the legislature could extract $535 million over fiscal 94, 95, and 96 to help the state out without impairing the corporation's ability to continue the programs that were in place at the time. We did have some concern, as did AHFC, over what that action may do to the bond rating of the corporation. However, since that extraction of $200 million last session, there has been no negative impact on the corporation's bond ratings. I believe one of the rating agencies did put them on a negative watch, so to speak, or an alert that to pay attention to, but their bond ratings, in fact, did not drop. The legislature only took $200 million last year, and in fact, we were saying that they could have taken $200 million to satisfy fiscal 94 needs and an additional $213 million, I believe, for fiscal 95. So the legislature extracted less than we said was available to the legislature last year. So to that extent, there would tell me that there are excess funds still available. We are, at the request of the Budget and Audit Committee, presently updating that analysis. We intend to have a report to the Budget and Audit Committee on Thursday that will provide our updated numbers of what we believe can be extracted from AHFC for fiscal 95, 96, and 97. Basically, we already know we extracted 200 for fiscal 95, so our report will discuss primarily the possibility, if any, of extracting cash for 96 and 97. We've also, the Budget and Audit Committee also asked us to look at the bond issues that were issued since the last action by the legislature to see whether there have been any new or unusual provisions incorporated in those bond issues. So that will be discussed also at the meeting on Thursday. So we are on track for meeting that report date, and much more current updated information would be available to the legislature at that point in time. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from committee members? Just a clarification, that's this Thursday, LBNA?
Yes. The Budget and Audit Committee is scheduled to meet. They conducted an oversight hearing last Thursday on AHFC, last Thursday afternoon, that primarily spent the time discussing the 5% mortgage program that was in the news and drew a lot of attention, $115 million. That oversight hearing is continued this Thursday on AHFC to continue discussion of that program, as well as hear the results of our financial analysis, and that is scheduled, I believe, for 3:30 or 3 o'clock.
Thursday.
3 o'clock on Thursday in the House Finance Committee room.
And included in that will be the latest update, incorporate the latest activities of the 5% second phase, 5% loan program.
Right. We've been asked to do a little research on the the use of arbitrage earnings of the corporation to better explain that to the Budget and Audit Committee. We're also asked to look into some aspects of the proposed consolidated office building that HFC is in the process of constructing, design build in Anchorage. I believe they're still in the design stage right now. We were asked to do some research on that, so it will be a busy meeting on Thursday dealing exclusively with HFC matters.
Very good.
As I said, the intent of this bill was to keep it in the forefront, get as much information as possible, and as you'll note, its next referral is in finance. All three of us here at the table will once again be visiting this topic, whether it's by this vehicle or in the budget, I'm sure. I would just as soon move this on up to finance and let it be at least a point of reference for the cash availability from HFC, if that's the desire of those chairmen up there.
Any more witnesses? Mr. Chairman, if we don't have any people that are witnesses to testify,
she's checking.
I'll just make the motion and then.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate Bill 40, apparently unamended, be moved from this committee to Senate Finance Committee with individual recs.
Any objections? So ordered. Thank you, Mr. Arbor. We will then move on to SB 1, Act relating to state implementation of federal statutes. Sponsor Senator Robin Taylor. Representative of the sponsor is here. Please state your name and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Joe Ambrose. I work for Senator Taylor, the prime sponsor of Senate Bill 1. And Senator Taylor apologizes for not being here. I kind of expect him at any minute. I'll go ahead with his sponsor statement nonetheless. Senate Bill 1 was introduced as a companion measure to SJR 7. That's the 10th Amendment resolution that passed the Senate recently in an 18-1 vote. The resolution demands that Congress stop the practice of passing federal mandates which exceed the constitutional authority of the 10th Amendment. Senate Bill 1 is an attempt to identify federal mandates, both statutory and regulatory, which conflict with state policy or exceed that constitutional limitation. Similar legislation passed in Colorado last year. It declares that state government has an obligation to the public to do what is necessary to protect the rights of the citizens of the state under federal law while minimizing or eliminating any additional cost or regulatory burden. To accomplish this goal, SB 1 would require an annual review by the executive branch of each program mandated by Congress. An annual report to the governor and the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee would set out conclusions and make recommendations for changes either in the federal law to make the program consistent with state policy or more cost-effective. A determination could be made with the assistance of the Department of Law on whether the mandate exceeds federal authority. Section 1 of the bill finds that there is an urgent need to modify certain mandates because implementation of those mandates wastes financial resources of the state, municipalities, and the residents, and that federal regulators often do not understand the needs and priorities of Alaska. SB 1 also provides for legislative review of federal mandates. The Legislative Budget and Audit Committee would be charged with making recommendations to the governor on the need to seek a change in the federal statute, regulation, or policy suited to the needs of the state, suggest changes in the affected state program to implement the mandate more efficiently, or to pursue the possibility of legal challenges on the validity of the mandate. Passage of SB 1 would add credence to the legislature's passage of SJR 7. It will tell the citizens of Alaska that the legislature intends to protect their rights by countering notions of federalism which conflict with the intent of the Founding Fathers. I was asked to add a couple of comments based on the fiscal notes. Senator Taylor points out that the Department of Health and Social Services says it will need a $77,000 special assistant to the commissioner in order to implement this law. Public Safety says it'll need $6,000 for a person to establish a format and timetable, seek input, compile responses, draw conclusions, and issue a report. He's frankly astounded that the type of review envisioned by SB 1 is not already part of the budget process. It's difficult to believe that the departments don't already review mandated programs with an eye on cost effectiveness and inconsistency with state policy. Realizing that departments don't currently review programs to determine if they exceed the constitutional authority, the idea was to flag programs for later review by the Budget and Audit Committee. And in that respect, SB 1 may need some sort of amendment to strengthen that message. Senator Taylor said he appreciates the aggressiveness with which some departments feel they would pursue their interpretation of SB 1, but suspects that a lot of the work proposed by this bill is already being done.
Senator Phillips.
Well, Joe, I was going to make a comment. It sounds like departments are real supportive of this bill, right?
Depends on your interpretation, I guess.
Is there an official position paper from the government?
No, sir. Nothing from the administration.
Okay. Well, anyway, this is not the first time I've seen this support of such a bill.
Any other questions, committee members?
It's also Health and Social Services.
Thank you, Mr. Ambrose.
And Mr. Chairman.
We have.
Did you see that, Donnelly? That's this going on?
Oh, yeah, everyone you're going to see is good.
Yeah.
Person signed up to testify. I don't see Porcho here, but is Jack. Yes, far and only here. Right, there you are. Would you care to testify?
Mr. Chairman, maybe I signed the wrong form. I was trying to go for House CR1.
Oh, yeah.
Sure did.
I didn't look at the top either.
Yeah, SB.
That's SB 1.
This is Senate Bill 1.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He signed the wrong one.
Oh. It's long-range financial planning commission.
Yes.
Wrong description on it. Right number, wrong description. Okay. Okay. Is there anybody on that?
Mr. Chairman, can I ask Joe a question?
Yes.
Hey, are you, Joe, I assume the sponsor wants us to pass this bill and then deal with the fiscal notes in Senate Finance. Is that correct? Okay. You still got another committee to go to after this one. Okay.
There was a little confusion on the numbers and the description on the numbers on the sign-up sheets. Is there anyone here that cares to testify on SB 1 at this time?
I move that we send SB 1 to the next committee referral, which is Judiciary. And I think it should need a finance referral, too. It was fiscal note here. So
I agree.
I'd recommend to the President of the Senate that with the concurrence of the sponsor.
Yeah. Mr. Ambrose.
If I could add one more comment. When the fiscal notes came in, Senator Taylor made it very clear that he would appreciate it if the Finance Committee would look into some of the motivations and when you see this kind of Christmas tree.
So. Okay.
Maybe a little more objectively.
Okay. Well, my motion is to move SB 1 to the next committee referral, Judiciary, with an understanding that it'll get a finance referral.
I'll talk with
individual
President
recs. Okay.
Any objections? SB 1 moves on to the next committee referral.
My legislative bill. Load up.
With that, Billy, are you ready on this one, or you want to give it a shot?
I wasn't a couple minutes ago, but I guess I am.
Right. We will move on down to HCR1, creating the Long-Range Financial Planning Commission, sponsored by Representative Phillips in the House, and now we have representative from President of the Senate, Senator Pierce's office, to give us opening comments on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I think members recall last week you had the Senate companion to HCR 1 before you. The House version, sponsored, as you mentioned, by the Speaker, came over first, so that ultimately became the vehicle. Last week, the House Finance Committee, just by way of background, worked really hard. The entire House Finance Committee or subcommittee held hearings Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. It accepted any number of majority and minority amendments and most of the suggestions from the governor's office. That's what you see before you, with one exception, in the Senate committee substitute for HCR 1. Ultimately, the resolution passed the House with a 37-1 vote. So what you have before you now is the proposed Senate CS. It's identical to the House passed version with one exception. I'll go through the changes from the draft you had last week before you and then talk about the one additional change. The House in its deliberations, page 1, line 7, added the words "and expenditure" so that the whereas clause would read, "The state must find a means of stabilizing revenue and expenditures at a sustainable level." The whereas clause on line 9 is an entirely new clause. On lines 11 and 12, there was significant testimony that the governor's office, as well as the public folks, testifying that they wanted public participation in the commission process. So they added specific language that the public would participate in developing the plan. The final whereas clause on page 1 added the language, "promote economic stability by diversifying the state's economy and lessening the dependence on oil revenue." On page 2, the House version removed the reference to a 10-year plan on line 3 and inserted long-range financial plan. And it didn't really remove it. It moved it down to a separate whereas clause. So the language that was before you that referenced 3, 5, and 10-year plans is now in a separate resolve clause. I'll skip over the composition of the commission for the time being and go to the specific mandates at the bottom of page 2 and page 3. The House went through each of the mandates very carefully, word by word, did an excellent job tightening them up, and added three new clauses, or three new mandates on page 3. They would be in the proposed committee substitute, subparagraph 8, 9, and 10. That's essentially all new language. They rewrote, tightened up the other mandates for the commission. And then finally, gave it three deadlines, basically gave it a March 15th deadline to get going, to actually be working, a July 15th deadline for a preliminary report, and then the final report due to the governor and the legislature by October 1st. Senator Pierce certainly endorse the changes that the House made and would urge your consideration of the committee substitute before that. The final issue, if I can refer you back to page 2, line 4, would be the composition of the commission. As you see in the committee substitute, there are 9 public members, 3 appointed by the Speaker, 3 appointed by the President, and 3 appointed by the Governor. In the House passed version, there were 9 members appointed jointly by, in essence, unanimous agreement between the Governor, the Speaker, and the President. Senator Pierce felt that getting 3 people to agree on any 9 appointees would be virtually impossible. So she's suggesting in the committee substitute that each presiding officer and the governor appoint 3. when you would ask for unanimous consent of the nine people, what that would come down to is just basically a one-person veto. So any person could stop the commission from ever working by not agreeing to the other appointees. And it seems to be a far better public policy to have each of the bodies, or each of the people appointed by respective bodies, to represent their interests. The House fiscal note that came over was 51-3. The one previously before you was 75,000. Senator Pierce would certainly go along with the 51,000. She sure appreciates the time, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, that you put in the bill, and I'll answer any questions that I can.
Senator Phillips.
Well, Bill, I'm not a real fan of this bill or this legislation. And let me just go through the, you know, mental gymnastics. We go through this, appoint the members, set the deadlines, submit the report. Here's what we need to do by this, it's 15 members tonight. Yeah, 15 member panel. And what is there to force the legislature to implement this plan after it's set in place or is presented to the legislature, say?
As it stands in this resolution, there's nothing that would force the legislature to do anything.
And the other thing is that, and I'll state this for the record, but the vast majority of my constituents are opposed to this concept, or the thinking, I should rephrase it, that this will do no good, what was the question. And secondly, they, by even greater margin, disapproved the funding of such a panel and suggested that maybe private groups ought to pick up the funding for this panel. And of course, last week, I think it was the State Chamber of Commerce was here, and I asked them that question, if they were willing to contribute some money for this long-range planning, and the response I got was basically no. So those are some of the concerns that are being expressed by a lot of my constituents on this, that they, number one, they feel this is not going to do any good, and number two, they think the private sector or private parties should be paying for this rather than the state government. So, and I personally, frankly, have problems with it as well, not just because of my constituents. I agree with them, or they agree with me, or both agree that frankly, a lot of them in their comments to me said, that's what we elect for you to do, so do your job. And so, Mr. Chairman, it's a good concept if there was something forcing us or binding us to follow this. But if there isn't, you know as well as I do, one legislature cannot bind another, and this asks for long-range planning, assuming more than 10 years. So my personal philosophy is that I think we ought to be doing it ourselves, lay it out. My constituents have given me a good roadmap of what they think the state ought to be as far as long-range planning, and I'll be submitting them as the session goes on. But I do have a lot of problems with it, and I'm not going to impede the forward motion to this bill in this committee, but I plan on voting no on it in the, on the floor. So,
any other committee comments of sponsors, representative?
Are there other witnesses?
Yes.
Well, maybe I got a few things, so, Mr. Chairman, maybe.
Well, Senator Donnelly.
Thank you. First of all, on the last page on item 4, it says identify and prioritize major reductions. I'd like to see that we set a goal for the amount of those reductions. I really don't think this is going to do any good at all if they come back and say, well, here's $10,000 or $10 million worth of cuts we propose. And I think the amount should be at least as much as our current fiscal gap between what we're spending and what we're taking in. If they really went and they came back with a solid program of specific cuts of that much, it might be a useful exercise. I don't know. I've never seen any other of these, any groups or commissions actually ever do that before, though. So I'd like to see that language added there is one thing I was thinking about. Something else, and I guess it's probably just implied, but I do believe the House version had, the Senate version has language on page 2 that the House version of two members of the Senate would be one minority each. And I would like to, I would support that, because I think if we're ever going to make those reductions, it's going to take super majorities hanging together to pull that off, whatever the solutions are to these things. I guess those are the two comments I wanted to do the sponsors. And, you know, my basic, you know, I have a lot of the same impressions Senator Phillips has already expressed. I just, this is, you know, really constitutionally our job and the governor's job, and I don't know why pulling in folks who are just bombarded by every special interest in the state, you know, while they serve on this commissioner, is going to do any different than what we've already been able or been unable to do. But I don't want to stand in the way of it either. I mean, I know a lot of people want to do this, they want to try it, and
well, Mr. Chairman, I think, Mr. Donnelly, I think this is going to have a difficult time passing the Senate, is my judgment of the situation right now. But I just want to express to the sponsor through Bill Miles that, so this won't come as a surprise, nothing in here will convince me otherwise, unless you mandate it that the legislature shall do that, but it ain't going to happen. It cannot happen unless you change the Constitution. So, you know,
Senator Phillips, and even if we did do that, how would that be any different than us doing it ourselves?
Well, that's true. I agree. I think there's got to be. Can I, Mr.
Are you done?
It's sort of like a dialogue. Yeah. Well, I just think that, you know, that the legislature, the House, Senate, leadership, governor, get, you know, come down, do this informally. Say this is what we got to do and do it. Let's not talk about it. This thing is nothing but talk about. And my philosophy is, you know, let's not talk about it, let's do it. And that's what my constituents are saying, and that's what I'm saying as a citizen of the state. Let's just do it. And that's what we got elected to do, and I just philosophically have a problem with this. You know, it's good to flesh out the public opinion and all that stuff, but, you know, I sent out these questionnaires, and I think I get a good sample of public opinion in my neck of the woods, and they certainly are not bashful to let me know how they feel.
Do you want to respond to that, Bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really can't reply to the senator's concerns. I'll sure let Senator Pierce know what they are, and all three of you, if the resolution would move out, would have another look at it. I think it's up in finance, pending referral on Thursday. So I'll certainly let Senator Pierce know all your concerns.
Thanks, Bill. Next we have Jack.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please come forward, state your name, represent, and glad to have your comments.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jack Farnioli. I'm with the Office of the Director in OMB and the Governor's Office. Pat Borchow is not able to be here today. He's in a budget meeting with the Governor, so he asked me to convey the essence of his testimony is that, as you know, while the Governor supports this legislation, our main concern is with that one section with the appointments that Bill Miles drew your attention to as to the single change in this version of the legislation. The Governor feels that having, and this was a good deal of the background to the conversation in the House Finance Committee, having the appointments arrayed as they are in the current version of the legislation does not preserve the balance of equality between the two branches, which was so carefully worked out in the House version of the legislation when both branches had a joint involvement through the unanimity provisions in the House version of the bill or of the resolution. So that's our main concern at this point, is that this change tilts that balance away from that equality, and that's our only concern really with the legislation at this point.
What is the change?
You're referring to the change in the proposed Senate CS here.
That's right, Mr. Chairman. On page 2 of the proposed CS, the work draft, lines 6 through 8, where it refers to the 9 members of the public members being appointed 3 apiece by the Speaker, the President of the Senate, and the Governor. It was changed in the House version. It was simply that all 9 members would be appointed by unanimous agreement of those 3 parties.
But, Mr. Chairman?
Senator.
Just on, hang on, you're not going to convince me to vote for this, but just on, you know, we had a hard time 2 years ago, if you remember, just getting 2/3 House, Senate, to and a governor agree on an ethics board. And this is, I'm just dealing with practical, from a practical point of view, this is probably a lot smoother running doing the this work draft versus the one that was passed the House, from a practical point of view.
Senator,
you wouldn't disagree with that, would you?
Well, I don't know that I would or wouldn't, Senator, but I know that the reason for us taking the position on the unanimity in the House version was that the whole conversation involving the minority majority counting, if you will, didn't offer any real easy solution. And basically, it was a felt opinion that it was easier to get the unanimity than to deal with the minority issue, rather than the difficulty in itself in achieving unanimity.
Good questions. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, oops. Sorry.
Well, I see merits on both sides of this discussion, actually. I think Senator Phillips is right in the point that's made about it being kind of very difficult. You know, somebody's going to want to appoint somebody that somebody just doesn't get along with. Mm-hmm. And but, you know, there's another way to do this, too, and that would be to have a little more of a balance between the executive and the legislature about how many are appointed, as it is in this CS. You got 6 coming from the legislature and 3 coming from the executive branch. And let's face it here, this state, the executive branch is, you know, very, very important and probably the majority component in the budget process, as much as we might want to think we're the status of the Constitution right now. I think the executive branch really bears most of the responsibility the way it usually breaks out. You know, we might just want to, you know, allow the governor to appoint a few closer balance to how many the presiding officers are appointing. I don't know exactly what that mix might be, but we might want to consider that. That might balance some of your concerns about the more unequal.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I think that the administration would be open to any approach that resulted in an equal balance.
I hope that Billy's taking notes over there. Okay, any other questions? Thank you. We next have Kevin Ritchie, AML. Is Kevin?
Welcome.
Have a seat, and we're glad to hear from you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Kevin Ritchie with the Alaska Municipal League. And one of the six priorities for the coming year of the Municipal League is involvement in a statewide long-range fiscal plan. And many municipalities have done this, in that most municipalities don't have large fund balances to fall back on. A number have done a fiscal planning process for their communities and would like to be involved in a statewide effort. And in fact, obviously, the state and its political subdivisions, which provide services to the communities, also provide for most economic development that takes place, involves the local communities in which it takes place, and there needs to be a lot of close teamwork. And so we're very happy to do that. And in that, this is obviously a highly sensitive project, which is going to take a lot of effort to involve all the people across the state, if it does happen that way. Municipalities are also a real good vehicle to provide some technical support, as well as some support in providing facilities, getting the word out, and finding strategies to meaningfully involve people in the local communities. So we're happy to help.
Oh, I thought he was finished. Are you finished?
I'm finished.
Oh, okay. Senator Phillips.
The local governments, they, you know, funded their task forces to come out with these 5 or 10 or 15 year fiscal plans, or do they just did it internally and say this is what we're going to do?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I believe it's been done both ways. In Juneau, which I was aware of, which I was involved in, it was done in-house.
I think it was done in-house in Anchorage, too, as well. And that's what I'm saying.
We're talking about
in-house here with the legislature and the governor, rather than have a task force.
For the record, I know Senator Duncan is committee member here. Uh, I know back in our community, considerable public input on long-range planning over the last two or three years. And as a matter of fact, the first year I was in the legislature in 1989, we had a gigantic revenue shortfall gap, they called it, at $600 million projected, and we all went back home for a weekend and had community facilitated groups meeting on each area of the budget and came back with input from the public. It did create a lot of interest detailed examination of the budget process by the public for the first time that I know of. I think a lot of them are surprised about the ramifications of budget making. In that respect, I think it had a value where the public at least feels involved. I know Senator Phillips would say that they feel involved through us, but sometimes I'm not sure of that. I think direct involvement speaks louder sometimes in their eyes. So in that respect, I sort of support this process and would hope that something would come of it, but that's my only comment. Any other questions from committee members of Kevin Ritchie?
Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony. Yes.
If there's nobody else to testify, I'll...
Is there anyone else to testify? We have two.
Absolutely.
Anyone else who didn't get a chance to sign up wants to testify on this bill? Any other comments from committee members? Or?
We have a proposed CS before us.
Oh, you do?
The top of the pack.
I've seen it, yeah. I think... No, I have seen it.
Well, probably the least controversial one I might guess are the ones that I'd like to see would be on the third page, to have set a goal that they identify be at least what the current fiscal gap is. Maybe I could move that at this time, and I don't know. I'm just guessing that isn't too objectionable to anybody.
Exactly. What are you proposing on page three?
On the third line, you say elimination of governmental services or programs of at least as much as the current fiscal gap.
In this case, for this fiscal year, it would be about $150 million. Next year is about $500 million.
But by fiscal gap, I really mean recurring revenues, not one-time revenues like, you know, HFC or something like that.
Yeah. So you're talking $500 million.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not controversial.
Not where we're from.
If we're going to send these people off to do this job, I mean, we'll give them a goal. This is what I think.
I guess my comment on that would be identifying the fiscal gap and proposals on how to eliminate it. I would hate to imply that would be within a 12-month period. But... And I think that's what that would imply by the way I understood your wording. No?
I'm doing that. I don't mean to do that, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry. I think, you know, if you look at four, you know, all these are like long-range solutions, really. And number four says, identify and prioritize major reduction in state expenditures to include formula and formula programs and include proposed consolidation transfer. I don't think that necessarily implies it has to be over one fiscal year. I mean, I think they're really looking at just as with some of the other ones, looking towards more long range possible solutions. But I think it would be a useful exercise if this group's going to exist, that they be forced to sit down and consider, you know, how you're going to get from where we are now to where we need to be without using additional taxes. Because otherwise, they're just going to come back and say more taxes, and then we're not going to do it, and then we wasted another year, maybe, you know?
I would comment on that I think, the way I understand this, part of the responsibility on a long-range formula for long-range financial planning includes the element of revenue as well as expenditure reduction, and this would aim at just an expenditure reduction, and I have somewhat of a problem with saying that looking back in history on what we had eliminated in revenues and what's coming down the pike, I'm not sure it's realistic to say that we should target reductions only to the amount of the fiscal shortfall. Senator Donnelly.
And Mr. Chairman, I agree with you, and I don't think this language would force them to only look at revenue, only at program cuts, but I do think it would force them to identify a list of cuts that long, and then in their, it doesn't make them include it in their plan, their final proposal to us. Their final proposal could be a mix of revenues in that, but they would at least have to go through the exercise of identify what would have to be cut if they were going to bring us down to that balance point without additional revenues.
I could agree with that if items 5 and 6 were A and B of 4, but they don't appear to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, anyway, semantics, that's just semantics.
Sure. No.
Language construction is not one of my strong suits, so.
Should I just restate it and then we can
restate it one more time? Let me write it down.
Word program on line 3. Of at least as much as the current fiscal gap between reoccurring revenues and current expenditures. That tightens it up a little bit, Senator Phillips. So it's reoccurring revenues, not the kind of one-time things that are going.
So we're expecting about anywhere from $125 to $144 million gap this year, next year, projections of 500.
He's talking about recurring revenues.
Yeah, so that would
be about 500.
He's talking about that.
Okay. So you're moving that as an amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I'd object.
Great.
Thanks a lot,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Duncan.
I actually will support the amendment. I don't see any harm in this commission going through and trying to identify $550 million in reductions. I don't think they're going to be able to do it. I think what they're going to find is that there's a lot of programs and services out there that are necessary in state government. And we've been told many times, why don't we just cut that much out of the budget? Let the commission take a look and see if they want to cut highway maintenance, or if they want to cut revenue sharing and municipal assistance, or if they want to cut education foundation formula by $300 million. I don't think they can do it, and I don't think they can come back with a recommendation to do it, but it may serve the purpose of letting people finally realize that the fat in the budget isn't there like people expect. There's programs and services that have to go.
Senator Duncan, I would agree with you. I don't think getting there entirely by reductions is something that's going to happen realistically as far as total public meeting public needs is concerned. So anyway. Do you have a comment?
Mr. Chairman, you know how I feel about this bill. I mean, I don't care.
I think you're going to have a great time doing this.
Any other comments on the amendment? Call roll, please.
Mr. Chairman, before we vote on it, I'd like to get the sponsor's reaction.
See, I support it, and I get it.
Bill, you're free to speak on behalf of Senator Pierce on this amendment? Okay. All right.
If the mission works that I'm supporting it, I won't support it.
I guess, I won't comment.
Let's go ahead and vote.
I object, but that's enough. Yes.
Shall amendment number 1 to HCR 1 pass? Senator Phillips?
Yes.
Senator Sharp?
No.
Senator Duncan?
Yes.
Senator Donnelly?
Yes.
The amendment passes. 3 yeas, 1 nay.
Any further?
Yeah, the membership thing.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Duncan.
I apologize. I got here late. I was at another meeting that I couldn't get out of. But I do have concerns, and I've expressed those before, about the way the commission is to be appointed and the breakdown there. And I think that was discussed, as I understand, someone from the administration expressed concern about that also. I don't know if Mr. Farnoni had recommendations or not, but I've got some. Did he have a specific recommendation on the restructuring?
No.
No?
No, he just said that the...
Mr. Chairman, let me suggest, and I don't know what the old version said when we talk about old version.
That they had agreed unanimously.
Yeah, and I just guess I think that to one to agree unanimously doesn't work, because we know how difficult that is. We've tried that on other commissions.
Very pointed at that.
I also think that for the way it's made up now, the administration, of course, gets to appoint three public members and two members of the executive branch, so they will have five appointees. The legislative branch will have 10 appointees, and I think that perhaps weighs it too heavily towards the legislative branch. I would like to propose the following so we can kind of even this out. And still, the legislative branch would appoint the majority of the members, but just let me speak this through first, and I can make a motion on it. I would like to propose that of the public members, five be appointed by the executive and two each by the speaker and the president, and that the legislative members then be more definitive, that there be two members of the House of Representatives and two members of the Senate, but it be clear that one's a member of the majority and one's a member of the minority. And if you did it five, taking the public sector first, taking five by the governor and four by the legislative branch, what you finally end up with is five public members appointed by the governor and two executive branch members for a total of seven, and the legislative branch would then appoint four public members and four legislative branch members for a total of eight. So it would still be a majority of the members appointed by the legislative branch, but would not be as far out of kilter as it presently is, and I think it would bring about a more fairly structured commission and a more bipartisan commission if it was more evenly balanced. To have the legislative branch appointing two-thirds of the members, I think, does sway the balance a lot. And I think it should be closer to 50-50, but my proposal would still leave it 8-7 in favor of the legislative branch.
You're moving that.
I would like to, I'm trying to decide if I should make it one motion or split it into two. I don't know what the reaction to folks are about the majority and minority. I just think it's fair that there be a bipartisan legislative membership on that commission. And this doesn't indicate that that would happen. Let me try the motion as a whole first, see where it goes, so we get some discussion, and then we can decide there. Mr. Chairman, I would move that we change the language in subsection 1 to be nine members of the public, not to include members of the legislative, executive, or judicial branches. Speaker of the House of Representatives, and the President of the Senate shall appoint two each, and the Governor shall appoint five of these members. And then on line 11, two members of the Senate, I don't know how the proper language is here, but one member of the minority, one member of the majority appointed by the President of the Senate, and then the same language on line 9, two members of the House, one member of the minority, one member of the majority appointed by the Speaker of the House.
And still leave item 4 intact?
Leave item 4, of course, yes. I don't know. Legislative branch can't appoint executive branch members, of course. But even by leaving item 4 the way it is, what you then have, well, maybe I added wrong, did I? No. What you then have is five members of the public appointed by the governor and two executive branch members appointed by the governor, which is seven. And then you have four members of the public appointed by the legislative branch and four members of the legislature appointed by the legislative branch for a total of eight. So the legislative branch still has the majority on the majority of the appointments, but it's done. It brings more balance to the commission, and I think that's the way we want to start this. And it clearly then, I think, could be a bipartisan commission that can you know, work and come back with a fair recommendation.
I guess my only comments, if we could feel that the four and the five out of the nine members would be appointed bipartisan, I guess I would be more comfortable with it, but I don't know if there's any assurance that's going to happen. Any other comments?
Well, Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman, bipartisan, you mean to require that the governor appoint so many of one party and so many of the other party, the same with the speaker and the president?
Just the point that it isn't obvious. Let's put it that way.
Well, I'm assuming, I would just assume, although I might be wrong, I'm assuming that we would, and maybe party wouldn't even play a role here. I mean, I think it probably would be some independents and some nonpartisans appointed. But so I would not want to speak about parties as much as people that they're comfortable with, and they may be, you know, it may be that the governor would appoint some Republicans, I don't know, or some independents. It may be that the president of the Senate would want to appoint all Republicans, or maybe there's a Democratic friend out there who could serve. So there's no direction one way or the other. It just gives balance between the executive branch and the legislative branch as far as putting together the commission, and I think that's important. Right now it's not in balance when you have two-thirds of the commission appointed by the legislative branch of government. The governor, the executive, only has the power to appoint five, and that's one-third of the commission. I think that really does lean the balance too much towards the legislative branch, and this was supposed to be a cooperative effort moving forward, and I think we should ensure that's the way the commission is comprised.
Any further comment? Object. Call roll.
Sal Shellman, number two pass. Senator Duncan?
Yes.
Senator Donnelly?
Yes.
Senator Lehman? Or, I'm sorry, Senator Phillips?
No.
Senator Sharp?
No.
The amendment fails.
Senator Donnelly?
Mr. President? Or Mr. Chairman? Do you have anything?
Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Senator Duncan?
Mr. Chairman, I would try then to change just subsection 1 to read 5 by the governor, 2 by the speaker, and 2 by the president. Not changing subsections 2 or 3 to give any indication as to whether they have to be majority or minority members, but leave that completely up to the speaker and the president.
Any other comment on the motion? Object.
Call roll.
Shall amendment number 3 pass? Senator Donnelly?
Yes.
Senator Phillips?
No.
Senator Duncan?
Yes.
Senator Sharp?
No.
The amendment fails.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Donnelly.
One way to balance this that I've been thinking about as the committee meeting is going on would be a similar proposal but a little different structure. That would be to have the two presiding officers, the speaker and the president, both appoint two people and have the governor appoint three, have one person from each of the majorities in the House and the Senate, one person from each of the minorities in the House and the Senate, and the governor have one executive branch official. And if you were to consider if it was all to break out as partisan as possible, which frankly with this governor I wouldn't expect that. I think he's been reaching out quite a bit, you know, as far as advice on things. But if it did, even if everybody just locked up and only appointed, you know, their own party, you would end up with a dead even four. It would be 6-6, which you'd have, you know, the potential for a pretty fair proposal coming out of something that was 6-6 like that.
Is the concern the minority-majority relationship, or are you concerned about the numbers?
Oh, just the numbers. I think trying to make the numbers work because, you know, if it was to become a partisan thing and things blocked up, then under the proposal
well,
that you...
The way I look at it, there's three from the House. The president sent three. The governor gets three. And the Speaker of the House gets three. Now, I think you... In my mind, I think you'd be on firmer ground if you asked for one of the three to be from the minority and be specified in here. At least you get that majority-minority representation, and I can go along with that. I don't know
but that's what we're speaking of members of the public, though.
Yeah, I know that.
Which is...
Could you explain that again?
Okay, here's what I was thinking. No, from a minority-majority perspective, just dealing with lines 6 through 8, mm-hmm. You got three members from the Senate, three members from the House appointed by the respective presiding officer. I'm saying one of the three must be a minority member.
Mm-hmm.
That will take care of your majority-minority representation.
Okay. But they're not members of the legislative branch.
Well, they don't have to be, I know. So,
What do you consider a minority? What do you say?
Well, we, on this side, it's the Democrats.
No, but I've, one through eight are public members, not legislative members.
And how many public members would you?
That's the problem.
Well, you got nine right here, nine for the public, which is fine with me, frankly. But you're, anyway.
For the public. So you.
What I'm saying is that if you're nine members of the public,
mm-hmm.
you got three and three. You know, obviously, this side of the legislative branch is controlled by Republicans. You can say one of the three public members shall be a registered Democrat, and the other two, whatever. If you want to take care of
some. Sure, Representative
Senator Phillips, are you just saying there'd be nine total members to the commission?
No. No, nine in this public part.
Uh-huh. Nine.
But I shouldn't make a bad bill better. So.
Well,
that's one of the rules around
here. Can I explain my proposal again? Maybe,
yeah.
You know, because it's a lot of numbers and it's complicated. You'd have two members of the public appointed by the Speaker of the House, two members of the public appointed by the President of the Senate,
okay.
Three members of the public appointed by the Governor.
Right.
There would be one Senate majority member, one Senate minority member, one House majority member, one House minority member.
Okay.
And there'd be one executive official.
Let's see how that works today.
And the way the numbers that I come out with here for that is it's six and six, basically. If it was to become a partisan thing, you know, it'd be six and six. And it wouldn't have to be because, of course, both the presiding officers and the governor would be free to appoint anyone they wanted to those public seats. But if it became a partisan issue, the worst that could happen would be a tie.
Six. Board members.
Well, that's true, but the minority members are the same party as the governor. They would tend to work with the governor, I would think, and I think that's the fear that they have about giving the governor, you know, that many more in and also having us. But
I'm not sure why anybody wants to be in charge of this thing to begin with.
I'm not either, but I mean,
we should make it all Republicans.
I'd be worried. I wouldn't. This is going to be a tough job.
I recommend taxes.
Bad chance from this guy.
Randy.
Let me get this straight. Yeah. Paragraph one, you're saying there are six members, right?
Actually, it'd be seven members of the public.
Okay.
Two appointed by each of the presiding officers and three by the governor.
Okay, I see. Seven there.
And I think this has an advantage, too, because you know how hard it is to get this many people together to have a meeting.
I already know about it. Budget audit.
And there'd be a few less people. There'd be two less people in this proposal. Well, three, actually, because only one from the executive.
Can we back up a little bit here? I don't think we accept to make your amendment legal. Can we adopt the CS?
Mr. Chairman,
I don't think we did that. No.
Mr. Chairman, I move that for discussion purposes only, that we adopt Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Concurrent Resolution Number 1, State Affairs. And then
I will note that that also now has been amended on page 3 to include the language that was approved 3-1 on item 4. Starting on line 3, that's line 3. Okay, that's where we're at now. Senator Duncan.
Has Senator Donnelly moved his amendment?
Well, I'd move that because it should be before us to discuss. Is that okay, Mr. Chairman? Okay. So if I try to be more specific here for the staff, the amendment would say that there would be nine members of the public. Seven members of the public, not to include members of the legislative, executive, judicial branches. Speaker of the House of Representatives shall appoint two. The President of the Senate appoint two. The Governor appoint three. Then on the next line there, line 9 on page 2, it would say two members of the House of Representatives, appointed by the Speaker of the House, one each from the minority and majority. And then on line three, the same thing, two members from the Senate appointed by the President, one each from the minority and majority. And then on four, line 12, it would say one member of the executive branch appointed by the governor.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Duncan.
Yeah. I guess I appreciate what Senator Donnelly is doing, and I think the bigger problem is not the party affiliation. I'm sorry I brought up the word partisan or bipartisan earlier. I think it's more the balance of the appointments between the executive branch and the legislative branch, and unfortunately this still leaves the legislative branch appointing twice as many as the executive branch. In this case, it would be eight by the legislative branch of government and four by the executive branch of government. So I guess that's still... No. Three public and one executive branch is all he said. He cut to two to one.
Oh, you cut it to one?
Yeah, that's four.
Cut them down to one.
And, of course, that also leaves you...
The balance.
That leaves you with a 12...
This was from 15 to 14. Too.
Right.
It leaves you with a 12-member commission.
Yeah.
So I guess I still have some concerns about that, and I guess I'd like to hear what Mr. Farnolli might think the administration thinks about that. I really do believe that the balance should not be along partisan Democrats or Republicans, but by who, you know, the commission should be appointed equally between the two branches of the government, legislative and executive branch. That's where the balance should be. And I also believe that the governor should have more than one member of the executive branch on the commission. And perhaps Senator Donnelly's amendment should have at least two, which would make it an uneven number, and would increase.
That's what I think.
To five and eight, which makes it closer. But in fact, I'm not sure why you don't do that. Make an uneven number, make it five and eight, and see what that does. Except I still don't like the balance, but.
You know, if you want to, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I don't know if I could just engage in back and forth here. I mean, that'd be fine with me, too. I mean, to have two members of the executive branch, I just thought the executive ought to have a unified position. They ought to have one person that could speak for them. But I guess, given the concern of between the two separations of powers concern, that probably would be, I'd support that also. The same thing, only with two executive branch members.
Which brings it to a 13-member commission.
It'd be a 13-member commission, but that's a lucky number for these folks.
So as you modified your amendment, there would be the nine would go to seven?
The nine would go to seven.
And the other would remain two each.
Yeah, okay. It'd be two, two, two.
Two, two, two.
Yeah. Right, which is 8-5 split. And then with it's back to Jim's amendment anyway, so.
Is it really?
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
Almost not quite there.
Yeah, but it's pretty close.
Okay, does everyone understand how the refined amendment is coming down? We change line six to seven members. We change, and we leave the others at two, two, two. And what was the rest of it?
And then the middle twos are one minority and one majority.
Yeah, that was restated again.
And it goes right back. It's the same thing as Jim's original amendment anyway. So.
Any other comments on the amendment as proposed? Amendment number what? Three?
Four.
No, four. Object, question, call roll, please.
Shall amendment number four be adopted?
Started with me last time.
Oh,
I'm
sorry.
No, started with me last time.
Senator Phillips?
No.
Senator Sharp?
No.
Senator Donnelly?
Yes.
Senator Dawson?
Yes.
The amendment fails 2-2.
Well, Mr. Chairman, can we try my original thought? And that was the same thing, only with one member of the executive branch. I'd move that.
So we're back.
Oh, back to 12 now.
Yeah, okay. Back to 12.
Oh, leaving number one at seven.
Yeah, number one would be at seven, the other, and then number four would be at one.
Any other comments on that amendment number five?
I just think this is about as fair as you could possibly get. I mean, it's really, you know.
Fair to the legislative branch, but it's not fair to the executive.
No. unfortunately, the reality here is this is a resolution. The executive branch doesn't have a veto for a resolution. So it's better than I think it's a big step forward from the committee substitute for a couple of reasons. Number one, it is more balanced for the executive branch, and number two, it is it's fewer people on this thing, and I just think these things get really unruly when they get. They're going to have a dozen people even under this proposal, and so it's a lot of folks.
So how would that seven be split down again?
Seven would be two and two and three. Two for the speaker, two for
and
the...
Item two and three members from the House and Rep and the Senate would be one each?
Yeah, one each. One majority, one minority from each.
And okay. No, I understand. Got clear in my mind. Any other questions? Object? Call roll on number five.
Shall amendment number five pass? Senator Donnelly?
Yes.
Senator Duncan?
No.
Senator Phillips?
No.
Senator Sharp?
No.
Amendment number five fails?
I'd have voted with you, but it wouldn't have passed it.
I could have gotten closer to where you wanted.
Yeah. I hope, not assuming anything, but I would hope that there would be further discussion on this allocation. I'm sure there will be. Whenever this reaches the Senate and possibly more reasoning and justification can be expounded on at that time, especially by the sponsor, or the person carrying it on this side.
We've got one last try,
one
Mr.
Last
Chairman.
Donnelly.
We can't seem to come up with a proposal on those other. I'd move that we just amend sections two and three to say that the members from the House and the Senate would be one minority, one majority each. So section two would say two members of the House of Representatives appointed by the Speaker of the House consisting of one majority member and one minority member, and the same thing for the Senate.
Comments on that motion? I would comment that it is something I would, since the version of this resolution, the Senate version, the sponsor's not here, I would like to have some of that input, but and I'm sure we'll get it later on. I would therefore object, although it has a ring to it that semi-appeals.
Well, we're going to get it later on.
Finance. I picked up the fiscal note here.
But I'm just looking at this table. On the Finance Committee.
There's three of us.
Certain of you folks on the Finance Committee, so.
All three of us.
Well, all three of us.
Yeah. Right.
Well, what about the fourth?
Next year.
Talk to Fred.
No, I mean, I really, Mr. Chairman, not to be critical, but I really do not think this committee should pass a bill out that we think might be changed somewhere else just to move it along. I would prefer that we get to sponsor and discuss that here, because I do lose my opportunity to vote on this again until it reaches the floor. And if this committee is just going to say, well, we got another committee to look at to finance, there's no sense to me coming anymore. I think we need to take this process seriously. This committee should be the one that formulates the commission. And I'm sure Senator Pierce would be willing to come and testify on the makeup. It's okay to hand it off if you're on the second committee, but if you're not, then there's a concern.
I guess my comment was, I think we've had, with five or six amendments proposed and voted on, I think we've had adequate discussion on the various options and playing the numbers game. And I would hope that if it's so desired that it continues at another committee level, that's fine too. But I think that we've just about exhausted the possibilities on what's been offered here.
But you said you thought it was important that we get the sponsor's response, and I think it is also. And it's important to get it in the first committee referral, not just the second, because certain of us don't serve on the second night. And I
I see that.
Well, I can always change my vote.
You do not want to do this until you knew what the sponsor said.
I can always vote no, and nothing's changed.
On this amendment.
Well, yeah, that's one option, but that doesn't give us the idea of whether or not the sponsor likes the amendment. I mean,
well, but if the amendment fails, then we're back to her original work draft.
I think that's fine. If that's the way the committee's going to be run, Mr. Chairman, and I need to know that because it's not worth coming if this committee's not going to do anything except move things on.
Well, could I ask?
I like your amendment,
Bill Miles,
by the way.
Question.
I don't know.
Do you know whether the sponsors discussed this issue at all? This, do you understand the specific motion that's before us now only deals with the four members of the House and the Senate, that they just be bipartisan, that one of each?
Yes, sir, I understand.
Do you think the sponsors, do you have any position from the sponsor on that at all?
I
find it hard to believe that it'd be a big problem, you know?
Okay.
Mr. Donnelly, you can offer that amendment again in finance. So
I know, it just seems like a really reasonable amendment to do here in state affairs.
I understand.
And, you know, I
understand, Dave. Mr. Chairman, are we going to have another committee meeting this week?
We will have another committee meeting this week.
But this is pending
in finance.
When?
Thursday.
Of course, we're meeting before this meeting. Okay. Amendment number 6.
Is it on the table?
Yes, sir.
Call roll, please.
Okay. Shall amendment number 6 be adopted? Senator Duncan?
Yes.
Senator Donnelly?
Yes.
Senator Phillips?
No.
Senator Sharp?
No.
Amendment number 6 fails to be adopted.
Any more amendments? Any more amendments, Mr. Chairman?
Any more amendments?
Chairman, I move that Senate committee substitute for House current resolution number 1, State Affairs, as presented by this committee, pass on to the next committee with individual recommendations. The next committee will be Senate Finance.
As amended.
Pardon?
As amended.
As amended.
Object.
Call roll.
Shall HCR 1 be released from the State Affairs Committee? Senator Phillips?
Yes.
Senator Sharp?
Yes.
Senator Donnelly?
No.
All right. Senator Duncan?
Nope.
Mr. Chairman, can I move we reconsider the amendment number 6? I would be inclined to move this on its merry way. I mean, it just seems like it's just not... I don't see how the sponsor would have a big problem with that. And, you know, I really don't want to obstruct this, and if you've got a time schedule, I understand that. I just
I would be willing to do that to
I would too
to reconsider amendment number 6. It was the last one, and go ahead, Mark.
I just move we Mr. interaction failing to adopt. Well,
Chairman, let me withdraw my motion first, so
okay.
Senator Donnelly can offer this.
I just, maybe we don't have to do it too complicated. I just move amendment number 6 again.
For reconsideration.
For reconsideration. Yeah.
It is up for reconsider. This is the reconsideration.
That'd be fine.
So we don't have to go through this exercise twice. Call the roll again.
Amendment number 6 is up for reconsideration. Shall amendment number 6 be adopted? Senator Duncan?
Yes.
Senator Donnelly?
Yes.
Senator Phillips?
Yes.
Senator Sharp?
My client, yes. Yes.
Amendment number 6 is adopted.
Any further amendments or discussion?
Chairman, then I move Senate Committee Substitute House concurrent Resolution Number 1, State Affairs, as amended, and ask for individual recommendations.
Any objection?
Okay, did that pass?
CS Resolution Number 1, as amended, passes to the next committee of reference with individual recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anything else on the calendar?
No. We next meeting will be Thursday at 3:30, and that completes our agenda. If there's any other comments from committee members before we adjourn?
Yes. When we did before.
Adjourn.